Yeah, I see your fucking hair.
You like my hair?
You're like a lone wolf and Cub, but if Cub was like his, you know, small gay life partner.
I am a Chicago samurai now.
You oh, like don't it? Do the voice. Don't
oh,
do the
gotta
voice.
Do the voice. It's okay.
No, it's not okay. Now you
it's
say,
okay.
No, you sound like a Greek guy.
I'm sorry. That's my fault.
Yeah, the Greek guy's across from me.
Aww.
I am. Fucking. We got sushi this weekend, dude. And they sent us a double order of like a lunch special. Mm-hmm. So like we legitimately ate about 48 pounds of hamachi.
Yeah.
And I now identify as the ghost of Sushi Mama, which is a great game on the PS4. But I was thinking to myself.
This sucks. This all
on.
Sucks. I'm fine.
Listen. I really feel like the over-policing of America. We really need
that took a turn.
We need to kick out all these fucking fascist fucking pigs that want to kill people because they have guns.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying this is a guy that's friends with a cop. And I think we need to put the mall ninjas from high school in charge. Take away the fucking Glock, give them shuriken and wakizashis, because I trust a man that walks around with a fucking sword more than a guy that's trying to flash his Glock at me. You know?
Same. My old roommate, he had a sword. And I trust him with
my life.
I
trust Nate with my life.
Yeah.
I wish that when we went to the bars with him, he brought the katana.
Yeah.
But my thought of the on this is just let me go with this. I really believe that we will be safer if all the kids we bullied in high school were in charge of us. Because everybody's going to be on their best behavior because nobody wants to get stabbed. And I just want everybody to know that I'm a firm believer in ACAB. All cops act within Bushido. I believe
that's ACAWB. That's
you know that does you don't the widths, the ands, you don't count that.
At least do like no, you do count widths. You don't count like two or and. So maybe
width
at
is
least
included. It's part of that.
At least
I just
do
want,
like
I just want Bushido cops. I want fucking goddamn, you know, Sergeant Kabuki mans in every town walking around with the fucking kabuki makeup, because you're not going to act out. You rob a store and that motherfucker shows up and is shooting fucking chopsticks out of his fucking sleeves. Crime? Zero. You'll never have it happen again. I'm standing firm by this fucking belief right now.
Run for president.
At least do like all cops adhere to Bushido.
Oh, adhere to Bushido.
That sounds so much better.
You should have consulted before.
I should have. After we had this hour-long conversation before we even tried to start recording about so many identities, I just think all police should identify as samurai. All
right.
We had a really good discussion before the pod, and then we know it's time to start the pod when we change to having a really bad discussion. the only good thing about this entire intro is
see how fucking moronic I am as a person.
I get to make the only good thing about this intro is I get to make this joke. While you were conducting no-knock raids, I was studying the blade. That's that's the only good thing we're getting out of this intro. I want to talk about something that's actually good.
Oh God, what is that?
Jackass Forever.
I legitimately had like everybody at the bar on Sunday night being like, did you see it? There's a whole ton of dick in it. Did you see it? I was like,
you gotta see it.
I do want to see it. I love Jackass. That's some of my favorite memories of high school, is going to see those movies and then stupidly trying to reenact that shit, you know, in friends' backyards while video camering, using like an actual video camera, like shoulder mounted one, like say you're on Jack Butt. We'll call it Jack Butt. Nobody will tell the difference. It's not gonna, MTV won't sue us.
It's like the first truly funny movie I've seen in years. It's probably the best out of all the Jackass movies. It's the got the best.
Is it
like,
'cause Bam's not in it?
No. It just feels good. I don't know. There's part of it's nostalgia, part of it is that it's like legitimately very funny. It's got like the highest Metascore out of all of these movies, but as with most things, I thought about it way too deeply.
No.
Philosophizing on a man's wiener getting kicked.
And so I did think about this, though. There's a couple portions, like, and I went back and I watched some older Jackass too, there's a lot of stuff within Jackass and within shit like that too that does kind of like elicit the same like fear response as like watching a horror movie does, because you're like watching people like do shit. And Jackass, unlike a lot of these shows, like they've shown their guys get like very, very hurt. And so you never know when like a bit's going to end with being funny or a bit's going to end with a guy in an ambulance. So there is like this slight bit of anxiety, because you also do have an attachment to these guys, because part of the reason why Jackass has always been like so good is it's like been less about just like the funny shit that happens, which is funny, and it would be funny separate of it, which is like, you know, when you watch fail compilations on YouTube. But the added thing that Jackass has is like this cast of characters that like feel like you're hanging out with your friends, which is like what you don't have when you just watch a fail compilation on YouTube. So like that's what like heightens it. And so it's kind of like this weird interesting thing where like all this stuff is like basically, when you look at it, like the same kind of reactions, right? Like you can go between being scared and like laughing in an instant in when you watch Jackass, which is like the same thing as with most horror movies. Like horror movies are either really funny or like you laugh at them the whole fucking time. Like that's basically
yeah, I mean, they're either like really like deep and like just full of like existential dread, or you're watching, you know, a little person dressed
chopping
up
as
a mall. Leprechaun. Chopping mall.
Yeah, you know, if a killer or any robot. Of these.
Yeah, any of
exactly.
Those, like, doofus, like Microwave Massacre, a construction worker that becomes a cannibal because his wife won't make him good food. Like, stupid shit. Like, that's completely hysterical.
If it's portrayed even slightly differently, it goes from being horror to comedy, or being both. And, yeah, I just thought that was... for some reason, I was, I mentally dissected Jackass after watching it, and I did come to like a slightly interesting conclusion, which is that, and that's it. That's all I gotta say.
Listen, kids, if you're gonna go to college and you're gonna study philosophy like Steve, at least do it for the good of the world, so you can dissect all the stuff we liked as kids, like Viva La Bam, Wild Boys, and Jackass, and come to conclusions about why it is actually art.
Waste your money, get a degree in like a humanities, and then pretend that like you're doing cultural criticism when you like try to find a way to like connect Lacan to fucking the Dudesons or whatever. Like,
and then go back to grad school and get a teaching degree so you can corrupt an entire generation of children. Like I'm doing.
Scared. Very scared.
Oh god. Like my biggest fear is like somehow I'm gonna like get like a regular like long-term sub gig, and somebody's gonna figure out I do this podcast and they're gonna listen to it.
Well, they're gonna figure it out if you open your mouth and say anything.
Well, that's why
I don't use my real
name.
You're
your own worst enemy.
I don't say my own name. This is all an alias. My name's not even Scott.
No.
Mm-mm. You're already a long-term sub, right, Jenna?
Because I watch Scott.
Oh my god.
I don't get it.
There was, I saw where the joke was going, and I was so...
The joke ready. Went there. It just,
I know. She
no,
just,
I got no reaction.
Yeah. Sub.
I'm tired. Give me a break, all right?
No. You want to be on this fucking podcast, you better laugh at my jokes. It's bad enough that this motherfucker doesn't.
I laugh at like 1/8 of your jokes, and you laugh at like 1/32 of mine, and that's fair. For some reason, we have hundreds of people listen to this piece of shit show.
If you listen back to the episodes, whenever you make a joke, you at least hear me. If I don't actually laugh, you at least hear me go. At least do that. At least put it in.
That?
Yeah, Jenna, can you practice your I'm participating laugh?
I can. I will laugh more if I don't have to talk to you.
I know that
all
you're.
The other
I know
days.
That the Semitic people are not ones for comedy. Can you just try? To like just give us like a hearty guffaw, if anything. Can you just try that right now for us?
No, I can't.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not a faker. I'm not a liar.
Oh, that's true. You do not fake.
I don't.
You have multiple times told me, oh, that's it. So
yeah. I'll sit there, lay there in silence and just look at you and be like, let's fucking go.
Nothing's better than, you know, for your confidence as a lover in the bedroom when a woman just stares at you and just goes, oh, Okay.
Listen, I pretended too long with people that didn't deserve it. So you're stuck with me, so that's why we work on it. And now it's good.
I've been a really good boy lately.
He's been a great boy.
I am very exhausted.
He got me beer. You're exhausted from being a regular person?
No, from you giving me the nookie.
Oh, okay.
As Fred Durst would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And Steve's just like, can we just go off the show?
I'm dissociating.
So, Steve, you picked the film for this week as we do a terrible segue into actually what we're doing the show about, which is horror movies. Uh-huh. Remind the people what you picked.
I picked When Animals Dream, which is a Danish film from 2014. It's fitting the theme of Lupercalia in some ways by having a looper in it in the form of a lycanthrope, a werid wolf. And there is some titty.
A werebroad.
There is some titty, even though it's like young girl titty, and it's like not like super buxom, but there's titty.
There's nothing wrong with perky titties.
It's the itty bitty titty committee.
Yeah. They have that in Denmark.
Mm-hmm. They're the originators.
No, I don't think they are.
Really?
You're actually very wrong, so
yeah.
Shut up.
Am I? Then who is? Who's the originator?
Let me look.
Okay.
Countries with
tiny
smallest
titties.
Tits on average.
I feel like it's going to be like
average Cambodia. best size worldwide.
No, we want smallest breast size on average.
Yeah, what I'm actually finding
are pictures of titties.
14 million results.
The average EU size in Denmark is B to C, with Norway being C to D, and the smallest being Philippines, Indonesia, a couple African countries, which is double A.
Damn.
So, yeah, Denmark's actually in a higher percentile.
I forgot about the Philippines.
Yeah, the Philippines.
Those are my people.
You love the Filipinos.
I love pancit. Ugh, yum. It's my favorite.
The average breast size in friend of the pod, Molly, is AA. EUAA.
Double A?
Double A. This is EU size.
Molly the country, not a woman named Molly that just happens to have double A titties.
To be fair, double A actually doesn't. People don't understand bra sizes, actually. Double A isn't necessarily... You could just be also extremely, extremely small framed. Like, if you look at me, you wouldn't think that my bra size is the bra size it is. You think that sounds too big. But it's because I have a wider, like, chest.
You've got chest girth.
It's your chest plus
and,
your tit.
What's your bra size?
Jenna, tell us your bra size. Forgot. Anyway.
But on this list.
That's
one,
my layoff.
Two,
there you
three,
go.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Only 14 countries out of all of the countries in the world have bigger tits than Denmark. So.
Fine. Okay. Fantastic.
To be fair, this girl is 16 years old in this movie. And playing. The actress is not.
Oh, she's supposed to be 16?
Yeah, she's a teenager.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my god, wait.
Why would a grown woman live with her parents? Don't answer that. Don't talk about... Don't look at me like our current situation is in anything like that.
Yeah, that hurt.
Okay, now it's...
I just want to put this out there, though.
Yeah.
Denmark would have drastically lower average bra size if Greenland was was counted within it too, because Greenland is technically part of the Kingdom of Denmark, so it should count. But this list has them separated, and Greenland's average is A cup, so it would
Thank
be
you.
Lower. It still wouldn't be the lowest,
riveting.
And thus I wouldn't say that they would be the originators. But yeah.
Okay, I'm glad we cleared that up.
Anyway, we're talking about the Danish film When Animals Dream. It is remarkably a beautiful film.
There are various reasons for the striking regional distributions of especially small sizes in Central Africa and Southeast Asia. On the one hand, a genetic cause is often cited. Women in these subcontinents are generally smaller and lighter. An average woman in Southeast Asia is about 1.53 meters tall and weighs less than 55 kilos. In Central Africa, women with less than 1.6 meters and less than 60 kilos are also daintier than the global average. This alone leads to a connection to the then logically smaller breasts with the same body proportions.
I just said.
Okay, but so, let's just give the people what they really want, and it has nothing to do with this film. Who's got the biggest titty?
Norway.
Norway?
In the world?
Norway. Norway is the largest.
In the whole wide world.
Oh, we gotta go to Norway.
The whole wide world.
They have a lot of dairy there. I know that like the Scandinavians are like the least likely to be lactose intolerant, and I'm just saying milk and milkers kind of just goes together. So
you know nothing about anything.
I don't know anything about anything. No. But what I do know is that we need to talk about this movie before this devolves into just a titty talk for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I'm sweating. Come on.
Roll the fucking commercial. So, as we discussed earlier before the titty talk started, we are discussing When Animals Dream, or Nardarine Droman. Taking inspiration from various coming-of-age horror films like Carrie, Let the Right One In, and Ginger Snaps, When Animals Dream concerns itself with the subtle horrors of teenage angst, burgeoning sexuality, and the isolation brought upon by family and geographic locality. While at times more earnest and sophisticated than the aforementioned films, When Animals Dream poignantly delivers narrative within a slim runtime, while requiring, like many stylized Scandinavian genre films, investment by the audience, it delivers a moving story that can be appreciated for, if nothing else, its beautifully bleak art direction that mirrors the emotional fragility of its lead character, Marie. When Animals Dream may neither sate the bloodlust of the typical lycanthrope enthusiast, much like myself, or provide the sharp dialogue and wit of American horror, its emotional bite will leave a lasting scar to ponder well after it ends. This was definitely a movie, after Steve suggested it, that I was kind of not super anticipating watching.
I could tell.
No, he was being a brat. He was being a huge brat. And I was ready to fight you.
I was really dreading this was going to be Lamb Part 2. And after, obviously, we did the year in review episode, I kind of came to terms with that movie. This one is so much better, just in terms of how it's a little bit more accessible with the story. It feels a little bit more emotionally realistic because you have Lam that's kind of talking about this idea of losing a child, which is obviously a very personal story, whereas obviously, we have a woman on the show, which will help. Teenage angst and, you know, becoming a young woman surrounded by jerk-off men, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more understandable because
more
we've all been
relatable too to more people because not everybody has.
We've all
a
been
kid.
Horny teenagers with questionable body hair.
Yeah.
So the film was directed by Jakob Alexander Arnby. He was formerly a director of commercials and advertisements. The Copenhagen-born Jakob has slowly made his mark across the Nordic world for strongly stylized filming techniques that merges artsy genre filmmaking with conceptually distinctive storytelling. Outside of his directorial debut, Arnby has worked in Danish television and film, including Exit Plan with Nikolai Coster-Waldau, who you might remember as Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones, and as a conceptual director for the Danish television thriller Darkness, Those Who Kill. I'm going to go really light on the notes today because we are talking about essentially everybody who's from Denmark and besides really one actor.
Wait, what?
What?
Sorry.
We're talking about everybody who's from Denmark.
That's everybody in Denmark. We covered them all.
It's just like Lamb.
We did it in one show.
It's just like Lamb or like Iceland. Like everybody kind of works together. It's not a huge film industry. They're all kind of work hand in hand, as I'll point out. We don't have to get into a ton of the notes because most of us aren't going to fucking know any of these weirdly pronounced shows. And of course, I know people want to hear me mispronounce things, but I'm not going super detailed with it. Anyway, his career began as a props assistant during the late 90s on Danish cop drama Strisser Par Samsu, where he would become familiar with actor Lars Mikkelsen, whom you would later work with on today's film. Lars Mikkelsen is probably the most well-known person in this movie. If you couldn't figure out by the last name, he's the older brother of Mads Mikkelsen, who, if you're a horror person and you're listening to this, you'll remember as Hannibal in the television series Hannibal. Besides that, it's a lot of either Danish actors or first-time actors in this film or people that you're probably not going to recognize. I do know that we do have listeners in Sweden and Norway and stuff like that, at least from what the internet tells me. But
Tusentak. Tusentak. That means a thousand thanks in most Scandinavian languages. So that's to our Nordic homies.
Nordic homies.
Tusentak. I knew that was going to sound bad.
Yeah.
On my voice.
It did.
I wanted. Yeah. I knew that's why I fucking said it.
I'll give it a shot. Hopefully, maybe one of them can write into the show and tell me if how bad my accent is. Because I think it's okay.
I think mine's worse than yours.
Tusentak.
Tusentak.
Now you sound like plumber. Yeah, you sound like Swedish plumber.
Yeah, it's from Sunny. Come on.
She is a Swedish plumber. She's great at the pipes. Anyway, screenplay by Rasmus Birch with original story ideas by Christopher Bowe and our director, Jacob Alexander Armby. When Animal's Dream began as an original idea by our director and the celebrated Danish writer and director, Christopher Bowe. Bowe, who is was nominated and won the award for extraordinary contribution to Danish film by the editorial staff of Filmland, which is one of the bigger, more, I guess, network names over there in Denmark. He also worked as executive producer on this film as well. And while not as well-known, writer Rasmus Birch penned the screenplay for When Animals Dream, using all those ideas proposed by R&B and Bowe. He himself is a short story writer and screenplay consultant. Birch would work with R&B on his second film, as I mentioned before, Exit Plan, which if you ever get a chance to watch it, it's fantastic. It did legitimately zero theater sales in America because the release was so small. But it's, if you want to take the time to search it out, it's a really cool, I don't know, like detective drama turn topsy-turvy, I guess, investigation of a hotel that masquerades also as a way to have a very unique type of a suicide. It's a really great movie. You should really check it out. But
I won't. But thank you.
You won't. Cinematography is by Niels Thastum, with Peter Brent as editor. As with most Scandinavian films, there is a lot more focus on the cinematography and less so on the dialogue.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Less talking, more shushing.
Yes, because both of us are very much the silent types. One of the crowning achievements of this film is the cinematic direction. It showcases the awe-inspiring moodiness of the western coastal town of Agger, which was the actual town that the film was shot in Denmark. And the film is framed in this glowing, kind of captivating set of panoramas, contrasted by the simple domestic set pieces, all of which stand together as some of the most memorable markings of the film. I think a couple times was just like, oh.
You announced.
Yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful movie.
It was really pretty.
And not to start with the comparisons too soon, but one thing that this did make me realize too when I was rewatching it, I watched this shortly after it became available in the U.S. and I hadn't watched it since. After having seen Lamb recently, I also realized, Lamb did, there were some nice shots, but it really didn't do much with the landscape. Comparatively, when Denmark as a country is very beautiful in a lot of ways, but it's stands pretty differently from the other Nordic countries as the where it's located is in a fucking ocean and it's mostly flatland. So you don't have the crazy mountains and fjords and all that shit.
It's considered the Venice of Scandinavia.
Okay. I kind of was like, oh, it's a cold beach. You know, I wasn't expecting that, I wouldn't associate a Scandinavian, scenic film
exactly.
to have that. So it was yeah. cool.
And with Lamb, because Iceland is, you know, very mountainous and volcanic, you know, you when you're watching Lamb, it is really these awe-inspiring heights.
Yeah.
Where Denmark is, you really see this seaside, the water. Yeah. It's like clearly looks cold, but it's also not like snowy. It's more wet and colorful.
It
it's
reminded
a lot of
me,
purples
remember,
and like oranges.
Remember when you were a little kid in art class and they'd be like, this is the foreground and then this is the background and this is the, that's like, I was like, oh, it's like a literal, like a picture, yeah. you know, like that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful movie and it does what we kind of saw in Lamb as well is, when you're using these big landscape panoramas and then you're doing these close-ups inside the house of like people's feet as they're walking, zoom ins on the face as they're talking, jump cutting from like outside to inside to a close-up here and there. One of my favorite scenes in the movie, though, that it's kind of hysterical and it kind of really sets the tone for how rural this town is when Marie, our lead character, goes to a bar with her boyfriend. And it's like this typical like little wood paneled pub. And there's like these two old fuckers behind the bar. Like
her boyfriend.
When she goes there, when she's going to dance with Daniel.
No,
she doesn't
she goes with her, the guy who she thinks is her friend.
Oh, that yeah. you're right. You're right.
Felix.
Felix. Yes. Yeah.
Felix.
But like, it's also like this techno Euro trance dancing in like this
in a shitty wooden
in like a beer
in
hall.
Yeah,
it's
in a
so
shitty
it's
dive
so
bar.
Funny, but it's kind of
dude,
like
it, that was that's a vibe, and I want it. I don't like dancing, but I was like, I'd hang out with Marie. She seems fun as hell.
You would shimmy around a beer hall, no problem.
I'll shimmy. You'll get a little shimmy from me, and maybe a little butt shake.
Yeah,
but it's not good. Nobody likes it. But it happens.
It does happen. We'll give it that. Anyway, Danish cinematographer Niels Thastum has had a successful career as a documentarian and director of cinematography and is best known for the film Borg vs. McEnroe, starring Shia LaBeouf. Additionally, he's also acted as cinematographer on various music videos, including one of Jenna's favorite recording artists, Marina and the Diamonds, for her video Lies.
I'm seeing her next week.
That popped
Hell
up when
yeah.
When I looked up stuff, I was like, that'll be a little fun fact
oh
to make Jenna
God.
Happy.
Oh, my God. Ugh, she's just an icon, a beauty.
A femme pop icon that happens
would you
also
say,
to be Greek.
Would you say she's a gem?
I would say she's a gem. That's a good one.
Does she shine bright like a diamond?
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. and also, she doesn't sound like Katy Perry one bit, and anybody that says that deserves to get fought.
Our friend decided to fuck with Jenna and say that, and the tirades have still not stopped.
No.
3 weeks later.
No, I'll never stop. It pissed me off to my soul.
Anyway, alongside Thastum.
Fuck you, Katy Perry. You sold out.
Yeah, fuck Katy Perry.
I hate her.
Anyway, alongside Thastum, Peter Brandt worked on When Animals Dream as the film's editor. Brandt, like Thastum, has had a long career in film and television, and acted as one of the most experienced members of the crew on the film. He worked alongside Christopher Bow on several projects, including Sex, Lies, and Taxation, which is very popular in the libertarian scene of Denmark. And I'll save all my other comments on the political side of things for later.
Please do. I want to be gone by that.
As well as numerous other television, film, and documentary projects in his home country. Anyway. And you're just fucking staring daggers into me, dude.
Because I have to listen to you talk about politics all day long. Like, I can't care anymore.
I do just kind of walk inside the bedroom when you're working. I'm just like, and another thing!
And it's not like, it's not even like I...
the free market!
It's not like I'm here like... I am not a libertarian. I wouldn't say that, but I'm also not like the opposite. I'd say I lean more towards a way that you would think, but not... But I just don't... I have no energy to give a fuck currently. I know I need to. I just can't. I can't anymore.
When you live with me, the give a fuck about anything is really hard.
My whole life, I had to listen to my to my dad talk about it, and he'd talk about politics, blah, blah, blah. Then I had to listen to my papa talk about it, blah, blah, blah. You should go work for Fox News, blah, blah, blah. No.
If you work for Fox News, we will have a serious problem.
He said, you're pretty. I said, okay, anything
else?
You
know who's also pretty? Gretchen Carlson.
I'm not that.
People trust a woman of blonde hair.
I'm not that pretty, and I'm stupid, too. So
you look way too ethnic for Fox News.
Yeah, too ethnic.
Your privilege is showing.
I'd love to tussle with Laura Ingraham. Oof.
I don't know. I would love to fight you, watch you fight another broad.
Yeah.
But also, like, you are just so accident prone.
I know. I'd have to have a weapon. Not like a knife, like a broom or something, you know?
Well, the thing is, all those broads will have a gun, so
yeah,
that's true.
You're fucked.
I'm fucked. Yeah. Okay.
Continuing on in a less gun talk, we have music by Mikkel Hess, whose sunny, moody, and vacant score is kind of different from what he really does as a musician. He's a Danish composer, jazz musician, and nominee and winner of the Danish Film Awards for his work on the film Exit Plan for his original song on that soundtrack. I keep talking about Exit Plan because there's a whole lot more about Exit Plan than there is about When Animals Dream, so I had to kind of figure out some way to tie this all together. Anyway, Hess is an active composer for film and theater. His project, Hess is More, is regarded as some of Denmark's finest in experimental jazz drumming, which he actually showcased outside many of his musical projects with the Danish Royal Theater's ballet, Europa.
I bet you Fred Armisen would like to be friends with this man.
Probably. Fred Armisen's a cool guy.
Yeah.
That's a... I don't think you're wrong, but that's like a crazy thing to be like...
Think about? I think about Fred Armisen once a day.
We have several framed photos of Fred Armisen.
I just like really love Fred Armisen. I'm just a big fan. It just I think about him once a day, probably. Not in a sexual way.
Well,
just,
if you did, I wouldn't be mad about
it. No, it's not. I think about Danny DeVito in a sexual way once a week, but you know. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Anyway. Budget of 4.5 million American. A total box office take, domestic in America and internationally, of only 111,952, because this is, at its core...
Not a million? You said 100,000?
111,000.
That's what they made?
Yes.
How much did it cost?
I just said 4.5 million.
I wasn't listening.
I know you're not. You don't listen when I talk.
I'm sorry.
Anyway.
That's no good. That's bad. Math.
Very good.
Arithmetic.
You're very fiscally aware that that's not good.
That's negative.
This was an art film. This was a film that is definitely praised for its direction.
I'm glad they did it.
And a lot less for, you know, its profitability. This isn't Spider-Man Comes Home or whatever the fuck that movie is.
Steve, didn't you make a tweet today about that? About
Spider-Man Comes Home?
Not being like nominated for something. Like, yeah. Why wouldn't a Spider-Man movie be nominated for an award? Why would someone think that?
Because Marvel nerds suck.
Because people are
Spider-Man movie.
People are terminally Marvel brained, and it's ruined cinema.
Okay, gotcha. I was like, I saw that, and I was just like, I don't get it.
I do really love that.
A lot of people were really bummed.
But it does. It's
say it.
It's not important at all, and has no like importance to like.
Are you trying to say Spider-Man isn't the voice of a generation?
I'm saying it's not.
I do really like, though, that we cover this really artistic film, because the film that we are ending Lupercalia on is anything but that.
Literally,
but it is still going to be better than Spider-Man Comes Home, wherever
stop.
The fuck.
Stop. I'm sick of you two teasing me about whatever the hell is happening.
It's going to be so good. I don't even know if you're going to sit through it. I'm, like, so excited.
Well, I get to pick the next movie,
Yes, you do. Anyway, we're going to do the cast and then finally talk about this fucking film. We have Sonja Suhl as Marie. This is a newcomer to Danish film. She's a quiet and sympathetic lead whose social status is often trivialized by the villagers of her town due to both her age, her gender, and the familiar issues at home, namely the concern by others for the mysterious ailment plaguing her catatonic mother that lays a pall of dread across their sleeping fishing hamlet. She does really play this really unassuming, awkward, plain Jane type of character. Like, she's a very pretty actress. But, you know.
You keep saying that.
She is.
Do you not think so?
I think that she's fine.
Jenna doesn't like other women.
That's absolutely not true.
No, women don't like other women.
No, it's true.
That's not true. What are you fucking talking about?
I don't know. I've seen you literally watch something and be like, I'll fight her. You hate fucking. You'll stand behind Alex Guarnaschelli, that pear shaped broad on fucking on Chopped.
If you say one word you won't, about
but
Alex
you look at Amanda Freitag and you're like, I don't like that bitch.
I don't like her because she looks like your ex wife. All right, that's why I don't like her.
If my ex wife could cook like Amanda Freitag, I wouldn't be divorced. No, I still would. Who's kidding?
Yeah, that's why I don't like her. Okay.
Continuing on.
Now it's out there.
It's out there. We have Lars Mikkelsen as Thor.
Amanda Freitag's better looking, but you can.
Thank you. Anyway, Marie's father and devoted husband and caregiver to the ailing mother. Besides Marie, Thor is probably the second most sympathetic character in When Animals Dream. Mm. Seemingly assailed on all fronts by his daughter's slow transformation and the shadow of violence his neighbors cast on his doorstep, finding neither peace nor solace throughout the film. Now, like I said, Lars Mikkelsen's the older brother of Mads Mikkelsen, who we are all well acquainted with. And I will definitely say, I had to sleep with a man. Tom Hardy's number one. Mads Mikkelsen, number two, easily. Handsome man.
Tom Hardy's your number
oh,
one?
Oh, hell yeah.
Steve, who's Tom. Your number one? I know you've thought about it. Like, let's pretend.
We've all thought about it.
Probably Ryan Gosling, still probably my number one.
Okay.
He is dreamy.
Not Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling.
Why would it be Ryan Reynolds?
Ryan Reynolds from Shenanigans.
Oh, that, from Waiting?
That specific Ryan Reynolds. Think about it.
I don't need to think about it. I've lived the Shenanigans life for 18 years.
Conter, Steve, come back to me later with a better answer.
No, there won't be. It's going to be Ryan Gosling. It's specific. He's going to enter me the second that the... the vocals kick in college is a real hero. When it's just like, real human being. That's just like when I'm penetrated.
Anyway, most of you will know Lars Mikkelsen for his role in Sherlock, or the BBC Sherlock, to be exact. Also, for my Star Wars nerds out there that still might hate what Disney's done with it, but do enjoy it. He's Grand Admiral Thrawn in Star Wars Rebels, which is also the greatest Star Wars villain ever that they did kind of trivialize. But I'm going to just get off my high horse on that.
I hate to do this, but I'm about to shit my pants, so we need to pause this.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so now that Steve had his poop break and came back looking pale and exhausted and chugging water, I guess we could continue with the cast.
I feel substantially worse than I did before.
You ate Turco Greek, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I'm still feuding with them.
What did you eat today?
I had a porterhouse for dinner. And for lunch, I had a caprese salad.
Oh, hell yeah.
We stand a caprese.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were talking about Lars Mikkelsen and Spider-Man or something. Anyway, we have Jacob Oftebro as Daniel Marie's devoted yet blissfully unaware kind of boyfriend whom, like many young teenagers, is experiencing puppy love, standing by her side and becoming her accomplice during the film's finale.
Much like most young men, Daniel will simply do anything for pussy.
Oh, yeah.
Including hijack a boat and kill like a town.
Like, I remember like getting chocolates, writing a nice letter
to who?
Pretending my high school girlfriend.
Where the fuck, you've never given.
She's got
me
like
chocolates.
Two kids. First off,
about the girl. It's about where are my chocolates.
First off, I've definitely gotten you chocolates before.
I know you have.
I've made you delicious dinners. Did you just roll your eye? I will never smoke you a rack of ribs ever again then.
I want a box of chocolates.
Well, Valentine's Day is coming up. You might get
Why would
something.
You want a box of chocolates? Fucking Forrest Gump over here.
Well, like Forrest Gump.
Wait, I thought we weren't giving each other gifts.
Then don't ask him for chocolate.
Shut the hell up, Steve. No,
I hate this. No, Michelle's been giving me the same bullshit. She's
what,
like,
don't you gotta do him?
You know what? I'm gonna get Steve a Valentine.
Say Michelle's name in vain on this show. That's
listen,
a queen.
I love her. She's great, but
she's great.
She's
a nice broad.
She fucking tells me the other day. She's like, what are we doing for Valentine's Day? I'm like, I don't know.
This episode's just gone
and she's like, I don't really like celebrate that. And I don't want to go out on Valentine's Day. It's too hectic.
Please don't.
I'm like, great, perfect, works for me. I don't need that shit.
And then
the other day, she asked me, what are we doing for Valentine's Day? I'm like, what do you mean? You just said you don't want to do anything.
No, that's not what she said. She said she didn't go, God, you penis havers are just so dumb. And that's how I'll leave
you're
lucky that women grace you with their fucking presence.
Why can't you just, if we're so dumb, then speak simply. Maybe that's not really the case.
I speak so much, so many words.
You do. That is absolutely true.
And I don't know if half of them go inside of your brain.
They really don't.
Yeah.
Need I remind you that I made you a wonderful dinner with steak and scallops, and then our fucking roommate just sat down and helped herself and had dinner with us.
Yeah. On Valentine's Day a few years ago, Scott makes me this dinner, and she comes and she sits down. She's like, what are you guys doing? What's up? Can I
have some wine?
I'm hanging out. And I was just like, okay. Like,
I'm trying to fill this woman with meat and scallops so she'll present her clam to me.
Did you have a three-way?
Absolutely not.
Was it tight?
We don't speak of said person.
What was her name?
So thank you for bringing her up and ruining the rest of my day. Can we move on with this?
What's her address?
Somewhere in Bufu, Indiana.
What's her social security?
Can you stop?
What's her social security number?
Stop.
666.
At first I thought you said what's her bra size? Like, that's what I was like, wait, what?
Is she like a Norway or like a Mali kind of bra?
To be fair,
like Denmark.
I hate that I'm bringing this up. Yeah. But we did come home from the bar one night, and that bra was in her underwear on her kitchen floor, and asked me to feed her chicken wings, which I did.
What did I just say?
It's funny.
That's funny.
It's hysterical.
That's very funny.
You were there. It wasn't like I was just randomly feeding a woman chicken. I would never do that to someone I don't know.
Was she drunk?
It wasn't chicken. I'm pretty sure it was a jalapeno popper. And second
it's
of all,
it's even funnier.
It's better.
And second of
that's
all,
that's so much better. Thank you for clearing that up.
I'm not saying that wasn't funny. That's funny. The past is the past.
The past is also hysterical.
Friends for a season, friends for a reason.
And a movie that is artfully done that we're really just not talking about. Continuing on, Sonya Richter as Mother.
I have so much rage right now.
I know you do. You should have the rage like Marie does at the end of this film.
No, I've had rage all day because I was listening to like songs about like, men suck, you know? And it's not anything geared towards you, but I'm like, stop talking, let me finish.
I didn't say anything!
You were breathing in to start talking, so stop. And I was thinking about it, I was like, gosh, all of those stupid idiots that I let me cry. So I was like having like, I wish I would have like had the confidence that I do now. And I was thinking of things that I would have said to them. And not because I care, just because I'm like, dang, I got so many like good one-liners and I just missed my opportunity. And now I love you and shit and I can't be mean to you. Like, yeah, but I can't be like, wow, you're a worthless piece of shit. Your mom should be so proud. Just kidding. I can't say stuff like that to you. So, yeah, I have a lot of rage filled up today, is what I was getting at. So.
I took a shit, and then the vibe's just been so off.
You shit out on us into another dimension.
I know, dude. Did I die? Did I actually die in there? Like, what happened?
You're in purgatory now, and somehow you dragged my fucking limp dick ass with you.
Oh my Hell God. Would be just us having to talk to each other and do this podcast for 24 hours nonstop every day for the rest
Honestly,
of our
if
lives.
If that happened, we would take over hell because Satan would somehow, like, mega off himself into a nether realm.
Yeah.
Anyway, Marie's catatonic mother requires round-the-clock care by Thor and family physician Dr. Larson to prevent her mysterious ailment from overtaking her. We'll never expressly state as to what her affliction is, the only real explanation being the Russians. The secret is enough to keep the town and its population on high alert until her unfortunate end is brought down upon her and her family. That is done by Bjorn, played by Espen Dalgaard Andersen, leader of the neighborhood watch that for some reason allows Thor and his family to reside in town while also leveling threats against Mother and the rest of the family.
Was that the big bearded guy? Or was
Bjorn, which lives like means bear, you know, okay. The big darn. Bear
and then,
guy.
And then the other was his mom and dad.
Just some sort of
I was just
large, hardy Nordic fisherman folk, yeah. Maybe.
That woman was giving me, what's the mean lady from Harry Potter?
I was thinking of Mimi from Drew Carey's show.
No, but... I like Mimi. Like, she sucks, but I like her.
Yeah.
The mean lady from Harry Potter.
Hermione.
Professor Umbridge?
Yes.
Thank you. I don't know why I know that. Fuck
yes. Mad-Eye Mooney?
Mad-Eye Mooney.
She was giving me those vibes, and I was just like, ugh, I hate her.
Yeah, so he's in charge of that. We've really lost steam here. Anyway, we have Gustav Djerkgis as Espen, Marie's co-worker at the fishery and tormentor, who continuously threatens and, in one case, damn near sexually assaults her fish, believing he is immune to any sort of punishment because of his alliance of Bjarn and the Neighborhood Watch. That guy's a fucking piece of shit in this movie.
Yeah.
I gotta say, if you push me into a vat of fish guts, I'm coming out of there and I'm gonna fucking beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, I didn't like one thing he did. I didn't like his face from the beginning.
He looked like the guy, Jenna hasn't watched Barry, but he looks like the fucking guy from Barry of Alopecia, that actor.
Oh, I don't remember.
You know who I'm talking about. He's like, yeah. Hitman Fred. Yeah. He's got that vibe. Like, he's just menacing because his hair is so blonde, you can't see his eyebrows. I don't trust a motherfucker if I can't see their eyebrows. Yeah. That's just part
That's
of my code.
That's why you like me. The eyebrows were so prevalent.
That's all I saw.
You were like, trust.
When
I trust
saw
her
you,
with my
I just
life.
Saw a woman in leather and eyebrows.
Yeah, there was no
And fit. That's two of my kinks right there.
Yeah.
All right, let's actually talk about this movie, and we can try to salvage this, whatever the fuck this episode is that we kind of gave up on.
I like it.
This is, even though we've kind of butchered this is a really spectacular movie.
Yeah.
Even though I had to watch it at midnight against my will.
Yeah, I held you down.
You sure did afterwards. That's beside the point. I think the biggest weakness of like Scandinavian horror is that it's very quiet. There's very subtle dialogue. It's not American. It's not boisterous. It's not big. This movie is not even truly fucking gory.
No, because really, they don't even really show you.
There's no real action until the last 5 minutes of the film.
But you barely even see the...
Yeah.
You hear it and you infer and that it's happening. But you don't see, like, the slashing or the tearing or the...
Yeah, this isn't, like, the howling.
That's probably why I liked it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh.
You do have, like, this artsy side of the films you like.
Me? Yeah. But I'm a visual person.
I think this is definitely an arts film. It's not going to be for everybody. We're definitely not selling this well, but you should watch it. But you're not going to get a whole lot of exposition, a whole lot of explanation. Like I said before, we don't really know why Mother is an invalid besides this discovery when Marie runs off and finds this boat that... It apparently was a Russian-owned boat, and there is a brief exchange between Marie and Thor, which is essentially, it was the Russians that did this.
To be fair, usually I care. Like, last week we were talking about, I'm like, oh, I wanted a little more. For some movie that didn't give you a lot of background, I was like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I just liked the movie. I was like, well, for whatever it is, I'm more interested in, like, what's gonna happen.
To
I don't care what
to
was.
To be fair, I'm pretty
to
sure.
Fair.
To be fair.
I think it's pretty clear that what's going on there is that the mother is werewolf style as well, and that she doesn't actually have an ailment so much as the medication that they're giving her every day is suppressing her from being werewolf.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Scott's saying, though, why was she? Where did that
come
from?
Well, I think it does come, and this is kind of where we get into like the kind of the political talk, is if you look at kind of the Cold War in Europe, I mean, Denmark and the waterways from Denmark... You know, in Russia, not that they're interconnected, but there was a greater threat from Russia for a country like Denmark, which was essentially neutral or kind of uninvolved, you know, compared to America, where like, stop the Ruskies, the red threat's coming. Listen to Joseph McCarthy. You trust him, don't you? Like, it's kind of that idea, though, that like they were closer to it. So like the idea of the Russians being at fault, like they were kind of the boogeyman. You know, from the 1950s onward, so it's kind of an easy sell to say, well, the Russians did this. What it is, we don't fucking know. like, which is Broad hanging out in Chernobyl accidentally, and she's a radioactive werewolf, but we also don't know.
No, what... I think she's just a bad bitch.
Well, as we see when Dr. Larson gets kind of ripped apart real quick.
Yeah. Well, fuck him.
You know, and this whole idea of using a teenage protagonist, a female protagonist as a source of, obviously, she's becoming sexual, as we see of her boyfriend. She's awkward. She's got this mother that's causing her a social stigma. It's not a hard sell to understand what's going on and to be somewhat compassionate towards them, because we all remember being teenagers. It's fucking awkward. I had a fucking mohawk and wore leather pants to school. Like, it could be worse. I never worked at a fish factory, but I pushed carts and I washed dishes.
I didn't have a job. Oh, wait. Yes, I did. I forgot. I was very busy, you guys. I was not awkward. I was
just... You were a very... God, Steve, I got to show you pictures of Jenna in high school. She is so orange. It's
yeah.
It's magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
complete
used to...
opposite of Marie in every regard.
Yeah. I loved Marie, though. Yeah. If I could go back, I would be Marie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A werewolf?
Absolutely.
Fair enough. My biggest questions with this movie, though, is why the fuck does the community allow... Because they seemingly seem to know that Mother is somewhat of a violent person, whether they truly know
right.
she's a werewolf or not. They do seem to kind of, like, allow the family to live there.
Like, right. Like, why didn't you just kill them years ago if you were, like...
Or just tell them to fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of it's the one thing of the film, even though I did really like it, that I have a problem with, is that... Well, if the broad's a werewolf, why the fuck is she, like, are you allowing her to be there? Because they show up, you know, Bjarne shows up with the,
right, and they're like,
the posse.
Look at her nails.
Yeah.
Make her strip down. All that. It's like, obviously they knew. It wasn't like it was a secret and only the dad and the mom and the daughter and the doctor knew. Apparently half the town knew.
Yeah.
So that I didn't.
Enough that when Marie's at the fish plant that she's getting harassed.
Right. But yet Marie did not know.
Yeah.
Someone let that slip?
Yeah, you would think
like
she's walking to school
werewolf.
And like, your mom's a lycanthrope. You know, like, your mom's a hairy bitch. Like,
but I don't know how much the other kids knew as much as, you know, the adults stuff.
But when the posse comes, it's Felix, like, on the motorcycles, right? To go get her. Obviously, they know. At that point.
Or they knew at that point. It doesn't mean they knew
previously.
You
don't think that they knew before?
I feel like there's some sort of...
I felt sketchy vibes from Felix from the jump. So...
Yeah.
That's just my interpretation.
Felix, who she, you know, who seems to live in his garage and just drink beer and hang out, which is like, we've all known a guy in high school that lived in his garage
and
had
beer. He was
trying
to be so French. I was like, ugh, get over yourself.
We've all had friends that we've drank in their garage and listened to records and smoked dope. Felix is a completely fine character, besides the fact that he, you know...
Betrayed her?
And kind of probably assisted in the gut-wrenching scene, which, again, if you're listening to the podcast, spoilers, we do find Mother drowned in the bathtub.
Yeah.
Which is a heart-wrenching scene because Marie's just like...
And that was obviously inferred that someone did it because the door was open.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That was sad.
Also, how the fuck does a catatonic woman legitimately drown herself? Like, it's not...
How'd she get there?
How the fuck does she do it? The woman can't feed herself.
Yeah.
Although you do seem kind of in the movie that kind of loathing towards her family when she's feeding her mom and she's, like, wiping the food on her face. And
yeah. Like, it's like her brain is still active, right? Like, in her brain is going boop, 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 and has a jillion thoughts. But the physicality, her body cannot.
Yeah.
Do what her brain is doing.
Which is
like
really more terrifying than being a werewolf.
Like the guy that was dead.
Oh, Short Night of Glass Dolls?
Yeah. Kind of like that, but this lady's actually alive.
Yeah.
That's what I thought was happening. Because I felt like she was making eye contact with her
daughter,
she right?
was. She was
there
talking
were signs.
To her eyes. She was
smizing.
Yeah,
she was speaking with her eyes. And even that one point where she kind of picks up her hand and moves it a little. You know, it was giving you that little, like, I'm still in here.
Yeah.
Even though my body is a shell of... Nothing.
And I mean, Sonya Richter, you know, for a character that's in the movie for a portion of it, who has no dialogue, which is really just she's almost a prop.
Yeah.
But it's this idea that you have a character that's a living prop that is kind of jarring because she is kind of the source of all these issues throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that Marie's transforming into a werewolf.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things that are kind of going on underneath the surface of this movie. And to get into a couple of comparisons that are obvious, I mean, we have the Let the Right One In comparisons because, you know, Swedish and vampire. We also have...
great movie, by the way.
Yeah, no, phenomenal movie. It's one of my... it's up there for me. We also have, of course, the... As far as puberty werewolves go, we have the Ginger Snaps reference, you know.
Which is one of your favorites.
One of my all-time favorite movies. And then we also have, insofar as the kind of, what do you want to call it? Like the being picked on in high school style bullshit of Carrie.
Yeah.
What this kind of gets into a bit more than these other films does, and obviously it lacks like some of the humor and shit of like a Ginger Snaps. We definitely see a lot more of the societal implications of a lot of this, right? We get a lot of like the, you know, you have like a mean girl and Carrie and whatnot, but all the trauma is really coming from the mother instilling the trauma, right? Yeah. Marie doesn't have like a sick home life, but she's got like, you know, you can see in the beginning she's kind of happy and resigned to it, right? Like her and her father gets
a little. It's not a traumatic home life so much from trauma being caused. It's just living with a parent with a medical condition, which is almost more
trauma in its own right.
Right, but it's not this actively abusive.
Not like an act of violence. Yeah, actively abusive is a good way to say it. Yeah,
it can be. It could and probably is. Traumatic, but it's not the kind of level of abuse that you see in like a Carrie. But a lot of it comes from more so from society, and you have like doctors telling you what you're supposed to do and people looking at you and casting aspersions and whatnot throughout. And I think that societal aspect of this is what really hits. And while the movie is not too like overtly gory and it doesn't like lean like super crazy into a lot of the supernatural aspects, it's also not subtle with a lot of what it's trying to say, despite a lot of the movie not being said out loud. There's a lot of explicitness in the actions and everything we see. And so when you see like all the bullying and even Daniel's actions, I think there's like a very, very easy read of Daniel also being like kind of, I made a joke about it, but he's supposed to be like, oh, he's the guy helping her. But like in reality, he's like, he is just like a guy trying to get pussy.
Yeah.
Like it could be very, very much so be read that way. Right. At the beginning, everything is kind of poised as like, Felix kind of looks at her a certain way, and maybe you can read it as like, oh, maybe that's sexual, and then later on you realize, oh no, it really wasn't. Esben's kind of looking at her like, I want to fuck you, and like doing shit, and then she has the like,
well, literally
with
using
Daniel.
A piece of fucking fish as his dick and slapping her in the face with it when they hold her down. Like this movie isn't inherently horror violent with guts and gore and stabs and what have you, but it is.
It was situationally horrific.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, realistically, too, because there's this aspect of bullying. There's this aspect of
being
outside.
And being the only, pretty much only woman in that workplace besides that, like, who was maybe a supervisor.
You know, and also, like, the threat of being a young woman and being assaulted. You know, like, there is this. It's very relatable because it's not just something that is just a Scandinavian thing. This is a thing that happens all over the place, where it's women do get fucking treated like shit for reasons that
just because they
don't make sense.
Woman,
yeah,
you know?
Just because it's an easy prey,
right?
You know, which makes, you know, the conclusion of this movie somewhat really cathartic, is because like you are cheering her on.
I was literally going hell yeah, hell yeah! Like I was like all for it.
Yeah,
I loved it. I wish every woman that was And I mean, technically, she wasn't even really sexually abused in this, you know, she was just more harassed. I was like, every like woman that that happened to, I wish they could have their like revenge like Marie got, you know, like, unfortunately, we're not werewolves. Not me. But
you do have your moon time. But
unfortunately,
that's beside the point.
Like, you know, ugh, people are not werewolves. But wouldn't that be nice? It was a nice thought.
It's a nice thought, ripping people shreds in our boat.
They deserved it. Sorry.
Well, it's interesting, too, with Thor that, like, after she kind of has that breakdown at dinner where she's, like, eating glass and just, like, bleeding out of her mouth and just staring at him,
yeah,
like, he kind of realizes, like, he's got to kind of wash his hands of it and just gives her, you know, the blessing and just, like, you know, like, make them pay. Like,
I took that
said,
as
don't take any crap.
Yeah. I took that, weirdly as it is, I took that as, like, a kind of, like, metaphorical sort of, you know, menstruation with the eating of the glass. And that was kind of like the father moment of like, this isn't just my little girl anymore. This is a woman who's kind of has to do her own thing. And that's where I find Thor as a character to be very interesting, because he is trying, right? He's trying to keep the family together. He's trying to take care of the mother. He's trying to prevent Marie from having the same kind of problems, but he's still doing it within the mindset and within the lens of like normal societal structures. He's just like, well, I guess you got to take the medicine too, right? Him and the doctor's like, you got to do the medicine now. Yeah. Like, this is the time. And it's basically like, you got to do the medicine and become catatonic like your mom, so you don't go werewolf style. And like, that's the only way he can think of it. He can't think of it any other way. And then, you know, one might say that like a good father wouldn't like be like, oh, leave the house, go do whatever, and would like rather try to help her at the end. But he's,
I think,
still
that was his way of helping her, honestly.
We also have to remember they're living in rural Denmark, where like they have a town doctor that makes house calls, and that's kind of all they have. They, you know, they don't have access,
right,
somehow,
but I mean,
to
they could
anything
leave
else.
They could leave. You know, like,
if they have the means to,
if they had the means, of course. But I mean, like, she's going on,
I mean, but
she's deciding to go on the run or whatever. So what I'm saying is there could be this argument that if you have like a father who's truly become, you know, who's transformed himself into becoming a better parent or whatever, would now that his wife is gone, go with his daughter and make sure that she is okay and can be supported in a different town. But he is stuck within that system, that same system that has been persecuting his daughter and his wife.
And I mean, and him, he, by association,
right? He instead opts to remain and quote unquote, you know, seemingly give his blessing for her to leave.
I mean, he does seem to, like, I say that he's the other sympathetic character because he is, in kind of his own way, kind of pathetic, because he's cared for both these women, and he doesn't seem to, I mean, he's not, like, they legitimately murdered his wife, and he's at the fucking church for the funeral shaking the hands of the guy that did it.
That's
like, he is kind of spineless in a way, because he's so neutered by...
Right, he never steps up and fights back in any sort of way. Not that you expect him to, like, you know, walk into the fish plant with a AK, but I mean, like, you know, he doesn't stick up or do anything else. He kind of is accepting of his position in society and what the rest of this town thinks and decides to impose on him.
I was going to say a joke, because that's because the movie's not based in America.
I mean, that is true, but...
and I thought, that's not funny. That's
Lars. Lars pulls out a fucking Uzi of an extended clip and walks into the fish plant and goes, this is Second Amendment justice.
Roll up in a long ship and do a drive-by axe throw. You know, whatever, like...
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I kind of find him sympathetic, because he's, you know, unlike Marie, he really does seem trapped and kind of just, he's not a masculine character by any means. No. He's a caregiver, which is, well, we kind of do look down, you know, at least in America, but I'm sure in Europe and other countries as well, we do look kind of down on men that aren't, you know, doing physical jobs and are working for their families, and they work in the fields and they're
O'Keefe's.
Exactly. O'Keefe's sensual body lotion for men. Like he's
we
like
look down on guys that don't regularly use gun oil.
Exactly. Because all real men use gun oil as lube, and they go to their personal Bjorn on the side, and they do that. But yeah, I mean, he's this character that he's so sympathetic because, like, he's kind of also pathetic, and but you feel for him. And I mean, Lars Mikkelsen, for having maybe, what, 20 lines in the entire film, maybe 30? I mean, he sells it because he's a fantastic actor, and he's kind of really the selling point of this, along with Sonia Sewell, is that, you know, you do kind of feel the familiar bonds, and you do kind of really root for Marie at a point because she's the strongest member of that family, even though she's a 16-year-old girl.
Taking care of his hot wheelchair wife, is he sympathetic or just a simp that's pathetic?
Oh. Yeah. I do love the finale. It is, you know, obviously she's on this boat. They're clearly going to offer and toss her into the ocean, and she just straight up goes beast mode, you know, like Marshawn Lynch, but, you know, much better because she actually does run in the touchdown by slaughtering everybody on the boat. And I'm still really bitter that the Seahawks never beat the Patriots back a couple years ago, but that's beside the point.
Ooh, football, shut up.
What this film does, because there isn't a ton of exposition, is that, you know, there is no sympathetic villain in this. They're just kind of terrified that they're next because they're dealing with this idea of someone that's afflicted with something that could harm them. And you can read that 100 fucking different ways if you want, you know. I mean, this is 2014. This is pre-COVID. This is post, you know, HIV epidemic. But there is still that inherent fear in humans of disease and someone becoming violent or detrimental or positive, whatever you fucking want to say, as being a source of, you know, oncoming death towards you, where like you almost don't want to feel bad for them. But at the same time, there is kind of, if you really think about it, like if you knew you had some sort of bestial motherfucker living next door,
move. I don't feel bad for them one bit.
Well, but if, you know, Tom next door is also not just a serial killer, he is also a werewolf. Well,
yeah, but he's weird, and he lets his Tom dog poop inside.
Tom of Finland?
Tom of Finland.
Finland's kind of next door.
It's kind of next to it.
I'd be friends with Marie, so, like, we'd be cool.
Would you?
Absolutely.
But
No,
I'm not saying that. I do kind of want the female perspective on this, though, because she is that awkward teenage girl with, I mean, there is...
She honestly, like, didn't do anything to anybody. She didn't. What happened is, they feared the unknown. Nothing happened. Yes, maybe with her mother, okay, and then her mom was fine. They killed her anyways. I mean, yeah, she did do that thing, but they didn't know that. And then...
Well, they suspected.
They kind of knew.
Okay.
The doctor, just the one doctor in town disappears, like... Do you blame the crazy broad that might be a werewolf?
The one doctor disappears after he goes to the werewolf house to do the werewolf treatment.
Menstruation, am I right, folks?
I'm sorry. I just don't feel bad for him. One, they killed her mom, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, then they tried to kill you. What are you going to do? Not kill them? And you're a fucking werewolf. Like,
but that's the thing that's... So this is one of the things that muddles the message of the movie to me. There was another movie. I forget which movie we talked about that kind of did this. I'm losing track of everything. Oh, Censor. It does the kind of censor thing that a lot of horror movies and a lot of movies in general that attempts to like talk about a thing via like allegory. It's a werewolf movie, right? So we have to end up having like someone go wolf style on something. But if like the whole thing is like, look at the way that they treat outsiders and or in like this is the way that that women get treated poorly and blah blah blah. Like I get that like the killing at the end is catharsis, could be seen as cathartic for women and whatnot. But there's also like this other aspect where it's like, well, you just proved all these people right that you're like a dangerous werewolf, like because you just killed like six people.
But would she have done it if they captured her? You don't know. They are the ones that they.
Yeah, I mean they brought up how they drew, brought it on themselves.
They drew first blood. Boom.
They drew first. I'm really glad you put the Rambo reference in this of all things.
We don't know this is one of the things that becomes speculative, of course, but we don't know like the exact extent of the thing with the Russians. I mean, the mother could have just been a werewolf, and then like the Russians came to town, and then she killed the Russians, and then that's when they're like, "Oh shit!"
They brought us vodka, and she killed our fucking vodka supply. And that's fucking bitch.
Yeah, and that's when they went, "Oh shit, this bitch is a werewolf. Let's give her the anti-werewolf juice. Let's give her the werewolf herding juice," and then they made her werewolf catatonic. So like,
I really wish they would have done like that.
Werewolf catatonic.
I'm pretty sure it's fucking Alex Jones sold it. Like the silver, I don't think it's silver nitrate. It might be. We're like, silver cures all. Like, oh, I really wish they were just injecting her with silver and we just slowly see this catatonic woman
turn blue.
Yeah. So she's just full of fucking silver. Like,
or she's like just wearing a pair of Mack Weldon's silver lined. whatever. Fuck. Promo code. Yeah, When Animals Stream at checkout. No,
you make a good point though. It's just like, there is kind of, and this is something that I thought about after the film, and I do really love a movie that makes me think about it afterwards, which is why I didn't put my rating for the film down until Tuesday, when you're hearing this Thursday, but I put it down Tuesday when I was putting the notes together, is because I really kind of thought about this movie for the last couple days, and I do like a movie, even if the logic isn't there at times, it does make me think, and the what ifs, and appreciating simple storytelling, because I think at the end of the day, there's so many overly complex storylines and ideas that filmmakers do that don't work. Like fucking Tenet, that movie fucking sucked. I love the concept of it, but holy fuck, that movie's awful.
Yeah.
Like, a movie that's too thought out, that's too inside itself, that is kind of too smart for its own good, that's not enjoyable. Where a movie like this, where it's simplistic, it doesn't explain everything, the exposition is really kind of lax, but it does leave a mark. And that, like I said, I came into this movie like dreading it, because I was like, this is going to be a Steve movie.
Yeah, we got in a fight.
We didn't get into a fight, we argued. I didn't like...
You argued, and I just... was like, yeah.
Yes, you're the quiet one for sure.
As he's turning it on, he's yelling about it, and I was just like, well.
I was tired. I was crabby, and I was trying to eat my grilled cheese and just couldn't enjoy it.
He couldn't. He said, I can't eat and read subtitles at the same time.
I can't. I'm simple.
And then had to pause it and then put his grilled cheese in the fridge and his tater tots. So. You're giggling because that's exactly what fucking happened.
I'm a man-child.
Yeah, I ate my sushi like a goddamn adult in the bed.
And you left leftover sushi on the nightstand.
Yeah, and I threw it in the garbage, Scott.
The room smelled like rotten tuna.
It absolutely did not.
Anyway.
Was that, and did that have anything to do with the sushi?
I'm done with Steve today.
Okay, let's wrap this fucking thing up because we kind of botched it. Final score for me. Legitimately, a 4 stars out of 5 on Letterboxd. Okay. I really did enjoy this. I would watch this movie again just to look at it. I really just really thought that, you know, Niels Thastum's cinematography and Peter Brandt's editing together for two guys that I've never heard of. They're clearly Danish guys. Don't watch a lot of Danish television, if you couldn't fucking tell. I would watch this. This is one of those movies that's just so visually appealing that it's worth watching just to see the story. 4 stars, absolutely.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5. I'm pretty much in agreement. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I did think it might have had the propensity to be one that you hated, but I think that it's a really good take on the genre and kind of like those various influences that we talked about earlier. I think that it's the perfect mix of mysterious and also like completely not subtle. And it is a beautiful, beautiful movie to like on an aesthetic level. There are a couple questionable plot points that we discussed and like I mentioned, and that's where I kind of think it loses some of those stars. But this is where also we're rating things, I think, like, not to get onto a tangent, which I'm going to try to keep it short because Jen is already looking at me with with very evil eyes.
I'm Marie now.
This is just the problem of like trying to put like a star rating or any sort of numerical value on something, because there is the aspect where I try to keep on Letterboxd like the stars to be like representative of objective things about a film. Like, is the acting good or bad? Is the story told well? Are there plot holes? Does it look good? And so that's
technical aspects pleasing.
Right. You know. Whereas when I do it, I'm like, this is what I liked.
Right. And so that's where like that's where like Letterboxd has like, you could put a like, a little heart to say that you like the thing. I almost wish they had a similar thing. I wish they had like 5 stars and then like up to 5 hearts.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because that's, this would be like a 3.5-star movie. But like a 4.5 hearts kind of thing.
Yes.
As stupid as it is to put a numerical value on that as well, like to try to make something quantitative about something subjective. That's the kind of thing with.
It's entertainment level versus quality, right. I guess.
Yeah,
and there's nuances to all of that too.
Yeah, and that's why like a Dracula 3000 would be like a 0.5-star, but it'd still be
right,
like five hearts.
Five, 10 million hearts.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Because Coolio's a vampire.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's hilarious.
And I think especially in
poorly made.
Exactly. I think especially in what we're doing, the genre that we're kind of like to play around in, there's so much of that, especially when we're talking about like 80s movies that have like camp and nostalgia value that you really like, but like are obviously made like shit and like are dumb as fuck, but like we still love them,
like fucking trauma movies, which are fucking cheap garbage movies that I fucking love because I grew up on them. Like they're atrocious, but they're so enjoyable, and it's kind of hard to really justify having like your technical ratings with your enjoyment value, like you're kind of getting at here.
Yeah.
Well, this reminds me when I used to do synchro, we would get two scores, and one would be your artistic impression and the other would be your technical. So they would score you, and then it got, I don't remember how it got combined, but so your choreography and kind of the music and your outfit and everything you did kind of would get, but then you had technical elements that you had to do. So it wasn't just like, well, I like the classical music and I don't like when they do a hip hop song, you know?
Yeah.
So it helps the bias, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically that would be what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that would be like a good way to Letterboxd, if you're listening, okay? Call us up.
Don't call me.
1-800 Groovy Little Spooky Show.
It's definitely.
I'm
probably
tired.
Too many numbers, but
if you're wondering what I gave it, because I have a letterbox now.
You do have a letterbox now.
I only realized that you
followed me today, so I followed you back.
Yeah. What is my name? Spider Queen, I think.
It just said Yenna.
Yeah, this is Yenna.
Oh, I think I made my username Spider Queen. Gosh. Well, anyways, I gave it. I swear to God, you guys. Hold on. Yenna.
You look it up while
I
we
gave
finish
it a 4.
You gave it a 4. Okay.
Because it was beautiful and
you do like women.
I wanted to give it a 3.75, but that wasn't an option. So I rounded up.
I agree. I'm not just saying this because I don't want you to be mad at me anymore. But that's why I gave it a 3.5.
Give me more options, okay? Letterbox, also that. Yeah. But I rounded up because I stan Marie.
I'm just going to straight up start rating movies like people rate on Shudder, where it's either 5 stars, I love gore, 1 star, not enough tits.
Oh, God.
And just that's it.
Signed in as Spider Queen.
Okay, so you're Spider
but then
Queen.
It says my bio, my name's...
You might just have your nameless. Yeah, we're gonna teach you technology. You're gonna figure this out.
Honestly, like I'm really good with the technology that I need to be good with.
Yeah, like but at then work. Yeah.
Right, but then if it's like something else, like I'm like, oh, I've never seen a phone before.
Jenna,
like,
you're never gonna survive in the metaverse. How are you gonna shop at Walmart online if
honestly,
you can't work Letterboxd?
Like that is just. I can't talk for another 75,000 minutes.
You can, so. But we're not gonna let you.
I know. I'm sleepy.
Okay, so what do we have in store for everybody? Next week's film is Jenna's choice.
Woo, 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 woo.
And I am kind of shocked what she picked. And I want to say, for the record, I did not influence this at all.
He
she
didn't.
Legitimately texted me and told me what she picked. And I ran upstairs because I was very happy.
I said, is this dumb?
What did you pick? What are we watching next week?
I picked Thirst.
By Park Chan-wook.
Oh.
Because I thought we were doing Vampire Month, and then Scott said, well, not exactly. Did you listen to anything I said? And I said, nope, I don't know what's going on at all. And that is says everything you need to know about me.
That's... You legitimately picked my favorite vampire
yeah,
movie.
But, and,
yeah, it's
and,
a great
yeah,
movie.
Yeah,
I'm excited
and
for
I,
that.
I know it's going to be very gory. For me,
yeah,
but I handled Old Boy pretty well, and
yeah.
I think that his gore is more artistic, kind of.
It is.
So I think, like, when
you're going to see one of my favorite all-time
yeah.
horror kills, when just because of where and how it happens, it's very artistic.
Well, I watched the trailer and stuff. I before I picked this, I also looked up a movie called, oh my God, what was it called? It was called, like, Vampire Lesbos or something.
We could also do Vampire Lesbos if
and
you
I
want.
Was like it was like a Spanish movie like based yeah. in Spain and then it but it looked so I was kind of wanting to pick something funny and like super like cheesy but I was like maybe this is like so cheesy and like so bad
that would have fit the theme better.
Yeah, I mean titties would be particular for Lupin.
That's definitely, we could do a whole series on that too, because that's very interesting, because like that's one of the many, one of the many films based off Carmilla, which is the second most adapted vampire after Dracula. So
isn't that wasn't that an opera or a short story?
It was a short story by Le Fanu, I believe.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
We could, yeah. So maybe.
No, Thirst is great.
We can do that other movie.
We should probably also
time.
Apologize. This is two of four movies that have subtitles. I know some of you do not like subtitles.
We're just like hella intelligent. So.
Yeah. You can also just listen to the dub. Don't.
Don't.
No, but yeah.
And if
not,
you,
you
do,
can't
if you do, we'll judge you. But.
You can't no, actually. You're not allowed. So.
And I think it's available on Amazon.
Amazon
Prime.
And YouTube.
Amazon
yeah.
and YouTube.
Yeah.
It's like $4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's a movie you should own, but it's
yeah, we were going to buy it, but then it was like, of course, I said, oh, it's $7.99. And Scott said, is it Blu-ray? And I said, what? And he said,
Jenna's got this fucking hard on against Blu-rays. Like, she wants to watch something that looks less
do you know,
good.
Do you know why? Because it's just like none of those dumb fucking things that exist for no reason. It's a TV. Just put it on the TV.
That's not how that works at all.
That's not how that works at all.
In my opinion, yes. When I go to
your opinion
Costco,
literally doesn't fucking matter. It's
when I it does in this household.
This
Steve,
is Steve and I show.
When I don't have to be on it anymore. If you if
no
that's
your opinion
like.
Your opinion about the factuality of how like audiovisual shit works. It's like your opinion
categorically
it's,
incorrect.
It's like your yeah. It's like your opinion as to whether or not the Earth is flat. Like it is. Get over it.
Yeah, Jenna.
Oh my
There's
God.
A dome over us. The sun hangs above us.
You know what? I was thinking about flat earthers today because I was listening to B.O.B. in the car. And then I was like, fuck, now I can't listen to B.O.B. either because I remember he's a stupid flat earther.
Oh, it's the like,
the rapper, whatever. Yeah. I was like, can any, nothing sacred anymore.
Oh, I thought you were saying, for some reason, I thought you were saying B.Y.O.B. like the.
No, B.O.B.
I thought, yeah. I
oh,
thought,
she was drinking in the car.
Yeah.
No, I thought you were talking about System of a Down. I'm like, I'm pretty sure the one System of a Down guy went crazy, though.
Well, that checks out.
You know, Armenians, am I right? Anyway, coming on this Monday, Valentine's Day, the Patreon is releasing, finally. We got it all put together for everybody. We have pretty simple way to start this, because obviously Patreon wants you to use goals. We have goals set for everybody that we would love to accomplish. I know there are people that are excited for it. They've let us know. So I'm going to pull up real quick just exactly what your options are, so you can give us your hard-earned money so we can grow the show. I got it right here. So we got three levels to start. We got your day ghouls, because, of course, everything's going to be vaguely, threateningly Italian.
Ooh, you used my favorite.
Thank you. Day ghouls, it's just $1 a month. It's a simple tip jar because you want Steve and I to get stuff we need. I need a mic stand real bad and an audio interface. And because the other part of the wonderful microphone Jenna bought me. And by doing that, you're going to leave a note and we're going to call you out in the show notes and every episode as a thank you for being a supporter of the show. Real simple. It's $1. Do it as much as you want. Give us your money. Tier 2, which is actually where you're going to get a couple more benefits. It's $3 a month, so we're keeping it real easy for everybody. So against your better judgment, you want more of me and Steve for whatever reason, you're going to receive access to After Hours, which is going to be a bonus monthly show. We do have it listed as once. We're probably going to do it twice a month. It's going to be kind of a less horror. It's going to be more of a social commentary. We'll talk about other movies. We're going to skewer political things and current events and probably get into weird political arguments, but that's fun because people like hearing two guys yell at each other. We're going to have that twice a month.
That's how I like all my pornos to start.
Because I know you do. So additionally, you'll also get access to the Discord. So if you didn't sign up for the Discord, now you're going to get access by paying for it.
You're going to get it.
You're going to get it. But you're going to obviously be able to talk to me, to Steve. You're going to have access to talk to other fans. You can let us know what you think. You can insult us. We don't care. You're going to have carte blanche to do almost what you want. Obviously, there's rules on the Discord, but you'll have access. And of course, if you're supporting us with the show, just like with the tip jar, you're going to get a shout out because we want to obviously recognize the people that want us to keep succeeding. And the last tier and the best tier is the Vafanguls, which is $5 a month because you're a sick deranged piggy that really, really, really likes us. You get everything from the Gabagool tier, but additionally, you're going to get access to Schlocked and Loaded. I'm doing the majority of those interviews, but I'm sure Steve is going to join in on some of them. That's where we kind of interview people that are in and outside horror. I already have a series done with fan of the show Barbatus, who does an adult comic with his group Suspace. We're kind of talking about this sexploitation work he's doing called Sad Sack, having some really interesting conversations about, you know, the First Amendment rights, what you can and cannot do, what is art, what is pornography, and kind of having this really honest dialogue about things. I'm interviewing somebody else within Suspace as well. I have author BC James coming in April to talk about his fantasy series that he's working on. We got Mr. Peter Atkins of Hellraiser and Wishmaster that's going to be doing some interviews with us as well. And I also have something a little special that I did not tell Steve about.
Is it what I think it is?
It is what I think it is.
You didn't confirm.
I'm going to talk to him on Thursday, I will be interviewing, and I'm sure Steve will tag along on this one.
Put this away.
Put this away so you can see Steve's face, sure. I'm going to have...
Steve will care?
Steve will care. Okay. I will have Bobby Liebling of Pentagram, a lead singer and godfather of Doom, doing an interview. He's very excited. We're just kind of hammering out what time we're going to do that.
Bobby Liebling is my hero. I told Scott, I said, I want to get a cat and I want to name the cat Bobby Liebling.
We can do that.
And just, and not call, it won't be Bobby, it's Bobby Liebling.
Bobby Liebling, yeah. So he reached out. We're both excited to talk. I'm as someone that's listened to, to Pentagram since fucking high school, and is a huge doom metal enthusiast. We're just hammering out when he can and can't do it.
I finally added the songs I like into I've been sorting all of my songs on Spotify, by colors and themes. that got all of the Pentagram songs in my black, obviously.
Black, obviously.
I know that's obvious, but.
And we have a ton of other people. I've had a lot of you reach out. OD Poltergeist, who's a horror rapper from Canada, who we've played on the show before. I'm gonna do an interview with him. And if you're an artist, writer, director, doesn't have to be horror. If you want to sit down and talk to somebody and get your name out there, I would love to talk to you. I promise I'm less awkward in interviews. I've had a great time with Barbados, just talking with him. So you're going to get access to Schlocked and Loaded for $5. With anything, too, after a while, we will randomly release episodes off the Patreon for you guys to listen to. It'll be much later, but, you know, we have a whole lot planned for the show. We know we have fans. We know that we're getting better with it, this episode notwithstanding. But it's
most episodes, I won't have to run away to take a shit and then to completely derail
yeah. everything. Literally, Steve sent us into another universe.
Like, yeah.
I don't know what universe I'm in, but I'm still fucking tired in this one. So,
so yeah, that's all coming starting on Monday. I will have for sure available that on that Monday, the first part of that interview with Sad Sack up there. We're going to have probably an After Hours episode up real soon. We know, obviously, February, we're in the middle of the month. So you're going to just have to bear with us. I know it's $3, $5. Money's tight for everybody these days, but I know there's some of you that are going to be very excited to listen and be a part of that. So, you know, beforehand, thank you so much. And then from there, we'll see where this goes. It's kind of a weird, wild, crazy time. And Jenna's holding up arts and crafts signs she made. So that's exciting.
It's not my fault. He's like in love with me.
Thank oh, my you, God.
I've never seen Mean Girls, and all she does is talk.
It's a good movie.
I'm going to a Mean Girls bachelorette party, and I'm in charge of all of the decor.
I can't wait till you call me drunk and going, "This is a Mean Girls party, and they're making fun of me."
Is alcohol a carb? I changed it.
It is.
I know. That's the God.
All right, we're done.
Steve, where the fuck do we find you on the internet, please, before I have to off myself?
find me at RootSpeaker on Twitter, on Letterboxd, on Twitch.
You botched it.
On Letterboxd, on Twitch. Also, Spotify. You can both follow my user account and see cool playlists that I post. And also, you can see my artist account and see my songs. A new song is going to be releasing this Friday called Going to the Sun. Almost fucked up that up too. I'm gonna be putting it at the end of this episode because I'm in charge of editing and fuck you. So it's gonna come on.
Awesome, do it.
It's not quite doom metal this one, but I'm inching ever more towards finishing some of my heavier projects. I swear I actually am a metal musician. So check that out, please. It's going to be on Spotify, Apple, and Amazon, and everywhere else. It's actually, if you're a Tidal pervert, it's actually going to have the master audio quality bullshit on Tidal. So you can listen to it.
So, you know, we lost Neil Young, but we're getting RootSpeaker on Spotify.
Yeah. So. I know. Win-win, guys.
Yeah, so check all that shit out.
Jenna, do you want us to what is your letterbox name so people can look at the five movies you've watched?
I've watched more. It asked me questions at the beginning, and I was like, oh yeah, I've watched that. Like Passport to Paris with Mary Kate and Ashley, stuff of that nature.
What is your name, woman?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
It's because I had two beers and I.
Oh
so
my
tired.
God! Just tell
answer the fucking question.
Oh my God!
It's Spider X Queen.
Spider X Queen. Okay, and you can find me on the socials as Da Ghoul Daddy, like Da Bulls or Da Bears. Da Ghoul Daddy on Twitter. Interact with me because I'm a degenerate. Want to follow anything of the show? Do so at Groovy Little Pod, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the Twitter. Instagram and Twitter is basically what we use for the advertising and everything. I put it on the Facebooks, but that fucking site sucks. So don't do the Facebooks. I don't even know why I'm still doing it, but find us there. And we'll be back next week with Park Chan-wook's Thirst.
Adios! Stay groovy!
Going to the sun. Press on.